Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Congress barely dodges a government shutdown. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says that's nothing to brag about.
Now we have press releases and press conferences to tell America the good news. We've avoided another crisis.
That conversation coming up on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good evening, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, Bloomington's two downtown entertainment venues are having a moment under the city's new management.
You know, it's probably more spin money and they will come.
Also, an appreciation for the late Town of Normal mayor, Kent Carricker.
One of the quotes that has stuck with us and we use regularly is, we plan our work and we work our plan.
Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Here My Story continues with local patients Ralph and Carol Weisite.
Boy, what I remember at the moment that I had my hearing aids in was just the clarity, and some of the background noises that I'd been hearing before were gone.
Ralph and Carol's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin was in Normal on Monday to celebrate Mayor Chris Koos's appointment to the Amtrak Board of Directors. Koos was confirmed by the Senate to the board earlier this year and had been recommended by Durbin. WGLT's Lindsay Jones spoke with the Illinois Democrat about other pressing topics as well, including the weekend passage of a government funding bill that keeps the government funded and operational until September. Durbin says the budget bill is long overdue.
This used to be routine. This used to be assumed. Now we have press releases and press conferences to tell America the good news. We've avoided another crisis. I think we ought to be stepping back and reflecting on where we are in this country. There are important things that need to be done across the board, and we continue to have the American people expecting us to address that. Meanwhile, we're still doing the basics. 5 months into the fiscal year, we finally appropriated the budgets for the federal government to do its job. I hope we can get back to the point where we actually do constructive things that make life better in America. I'll give you one for example. I'm chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Social media platforms scare the hell out of me. Not just as a senator, but as a grandparent and parent, of course, of my children. I see my grandkids holding these screens, and I'm wondering who's on the other end of that. Is it a safe opportunity for them to play or learn, or is it a danger? That's a reality that every family faces now in America. We've got to do our part at the federal level to regulate these social media platforms to protect children.
Your thoughts on the U.S. Supreme Court taking up access to medical abortion pills?
Well, I can tell you, mifepristone?
Something like that. Close enough.
I should know better. Been on the market for 20 years, judged safe and effective by the Food and Drug Administration, and now it's being challenged as part of the post-Dobbs Supreme Court decisions that raised questions about the future or eliminated the Roe versus Wade precedent and raised questions about the future of things as basic as birth control. More than half of the abortions performed in America are medical abortions with drugs such as mifepristone. I hope I'm close in pronouncing that. I happen to believe that they're safe and effective, and they have proven that in decades of availability to women across America. I think this is a politically inspired effort to undermine a woman's right to make reproductive choices. As you know and I know, America is divided on this issue. But I think the majority over and over again, even in the most conservative states, are coming down on the side of restoring as much as they can of the freedom that was guaranteed under the Constitution for 50 years. And so I don't know what the Supreme Court will do, but I hope that they will recognize that this is a safe and effective drug.
Your thoughts on plans to reduce postal operations in Champaign, Peoria, Springfield, and other communities in Illinois?
I'm very concerned because I believe the quality of service is at stake here. We've had too many areas of our state, and I can pick them out one after the other, that have seen real deterioration in postal service. People are waiting too long, and sometimes days, if not weeks, for critical mail. It could include Social Security checks, prescription drugs. All of these things are at stake. So the notion of cutting back postal operations is one that concerns me greatly.
Speaker Johnson said he plans to take up U.S. foreign aid once the House is back from recess in April. Your thoughts on that $66 billion proposal?
I can tell you it's long overdue. I support the United States giving material support and financial support to the people of Ukraine. The invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin is nothing short of an act of barbaric atrocity. And we have seen thousands killed in the process. People of Ukraine are fighting valiantly and really doing much more than we ever expected them to do. They're fighting our fight. They are fighting for our values. They're not asking us to send American troops. They're asking us to send material support along with the other NATO nations. Speaker Johnson has delayed this for several weeks. It is critically important that we take it up as soon as we return to Washington. I'll be supporting it.
And that includes those provisions for Israel and Taiwan, yes?
Yes, well, Israel, Taiwan, and humanitarian aid included in this package that we passed on a bipartisan basis in the Senate was humanitarian aid for the people in Gaza. I think this is long overdue as well. This is a terrible, terrible crisis, a humanitarian disaster of our time. Literally, children are starving to death in Gaza. We can't ignore that. We have a moral responsibility, and I hope that Speaker Johnson calls this matter quickly.
That was WGLT's Lindsey Jones speaking with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. A Republican member of Congress was also in the Twin Cities this week. You'll hear from Congressman Darren LaHood during his visit to Heartland Community College on tomorrow's Sound Ideas.
A major bridge collapse in Baltimore has wounded the city and shocked the nation. City and state officials are focused on responding to the current emergency.
There's no timetable right now on when things could be rebuilt or when things may reopen.
Get the latest on the Baltimore bridge collapse tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
I'm co-host Dave Martinez. Join us for Morning Edition weekdays from 4 to 9 a.m. on WGLT.
Thanks for listening to Sound Ideas. This is WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. Bloomington's arts department is showing signs of a turnaround. A string of sold-out shows at the Bloomington Center for Performing Arts came before the ink was dry on a 20-year agreement with the new Bloomington Bison hockey team at Grossinger Motors Arena. Director of Arts and Entertainment Anthony Nelson oversees both, entering the newly created role with a strict mandate. The beleaguered venues, owned and operated by the city of Bloomington, needed to start turning a profit. Well, if the past few months are any indication, they're on their way. The BCPA reported a 335% increase in attendance so far this year compared to the first 3 months of 2023. But in this conversation with WGLT's Lauren Warnicke, Nelson doesn't discount the role luck plays in their recent successes.
We'll always say luck has a part to do with everything.
Yeah.
Getting to know the community and what they want, you know, it's probably more spend money and they will come. I think they've always been hesitant in the past, like a Lee Bryce show. I think they would have just said, oh, that's awful expensive. Well, if you sell it out, it's not that expensive. Things like that, knowing where to spend the money and know what people are wanting to consume after COVID, because it's much different than it was 4 years ago. Comedy has done okay there, but it's never been a big seller. And I think everybody just wants to laugh after the last 3 or 4 years. So comedy has been just absolutely killing it. I mean, the three sellouts, the last three comedy shows have been sellouts. Bored Teachers, Charlie Barron's, and Trailer Park Tammy. All very different audiences, all three sold out.
It's such a good point. And that negotiating that, like what people want, sometimes what people want is more expensive to book, mm-hmm. right? So that kind of cost-benefit analysis.
100%. And some of the bigger acts that come through, and I get it. I have kids. I took my daughter to Annie on a school night, and I paid for it in the morning, but she's still talking about it to this day. So the one grumpy morning was well worth the trip to Annie on a Tuesday night. And sometimes for us to afford that show, it's got to have to be Monday, Tuesday, week we don't have the size of theater to bring in traveling Broadway on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because the tickets just wouldn't be affordable.
You've been in the job about a year now,
A year and a half, yeah.
As an observer, a layperson on the outside, you announced the season, and a lot of the stuff that's really been super successful came after the fact. So have you been able to kind of get out in front of it yet and plan a little bit further ahead now that you have more information, a little more staff?
Yep. And it's still going to be the same way. We still have a season to announce, but we have still left money and dates in the budget to get some of these bigger shows as they route through. Again, that's how they get a little bit cheaper. A Lee Bryce that shows up 3 months before it's going to happen because they decide, hey, I want to go on an acoustic tour. We want to make sure we leave some money and some dates to be able to get shows like that that we wouldn't have normally been able to pull off.
So a lot of the success has been at the BCPA. Mm-hmm. You also had a big announcement with the Bloomington Bison going to Grossinger. There was a strategy by combining these two venues that it would create more efficiency, like one staff, two budgets, I assume?
Yep, two different budgets.
But these are ultimately completely different animals to manage.
Correct. The staff where it does share are the parts where it does have a lot of overlap. We have one box office manager. She can build shows for both Arena and the BCPA without any problems. Marketing can handle marketing both venues. But we have operations staff that's separate at both venues. Production staff is shared. But again, a lot of that is a lot of the same work, just, you know, the roof's higher. And there's been a lot of shows where the arena's too big. Hey, well, we have a theater that's 1,100 seats. Can we, you know, maybe scale down the show and move it over there? Now it's getting more wins at the arena. We put in offers all the time. Obviously, that's a lot more competitive because sometimes with theater shows, they'll play Springfield, Peoria, Bloomington, and Champaign all within a 24-month period, where if a big act comes through, they want to play one of those arenas, maybe two. So you got to be a little more aggressive and try to convince them that this is the better market.
Yeah, I do hear that the ability to kind of navigate negotiations with both venues simultaneously might be beneficial, as well as re-educating promoters that the arena is available. But it was kind of sold to the community by the council as being an efficiency piece by combining these. On the day-to-day, does it feel more efficient?
You know, I'm sure staff at times, and I know staff are like, we need a few more people here and there, and we're, you know, doing our best to do it with some part-time staff. It's hard getting enough security, ushers, food and beverage staff. So everybody's sliced a little bit thin, but I think the day-to-day of watching people walk out with a smile on their face, it does at the end of a long day go, oh, that was worth it. And, you know, we have been able to do it with less staff than was employed between the two facilities previously.
Okay, so can the city of Bloomington be convinced by current and future success to bolster the department so people are basically less tired, I guess?
Yeah, you know? I think, but as a department, we need to get there ourselves. We need the arena to, you know, to show a few more shows that are profitable to say, hey, now we've got this. Now we have hockey. Can we get one more operations person or an assistant food and beverage manager? Things like that, that I think eventually over time we can show, hey, it's paying for ourselves. Let's get this one more staff and then we can do even more.
What's the goal? It's my understanding that like the mandate was the arena needs to start making money and nothing else really matters. And the BCPA was a little bit more flexible of like the cultural capital. It didn't have as much of a mandate to turn a profit.
Correct. I think there's a little overlap with the goal. We still want shows at the theater to break even. We don't want to buy as many shows that are, you know, we wanted to have two dance shows, so we'll do it at all cost. Let's do dance shows that make sense, but still bring people downtown to go to dinner, to get a drink. Economic impact, still the goal of both facilities, but there is at the BCPA, we still are trying to bring arts to everybody. We're at the arena. If that show's not going to make money, you know, we're not going to take a look because just the pay scale is different. Those checks are bigger.
Your predecessors were pretty focused, I think less focused on the financials, if I'm being honest, and more focused on kind of that cultural capital, making sure that there's a lot of diversity of programming. And this is not an accusation that you're not doing that. But I guess as you've kind of gotten into this role, figured out what's working, what's not working, where the bottom lines are, what's kind of your sensibility as an artistic curator?
As we're building a season, we still try to put every genre down. Did we hit that many dates with jazz, with dance, with theater, with music, and to make sure we're still hitting, you know, wide, diverse audiences, that makes sense.
Inevitably, it's a lot of road shows that mm-hmm. come through town, touring acts and things like that. And the one example we had of a local company that endeavored to be at the BCPA ultimately didn't. Mm-hmm. The BCPA made some concessions to try and make it work for Mio Opera. Mm-hmm. But what are the chances that if a local group has the capacity to rent the theater, that you would kind of embrace that as part of your season?
Yep. We're always looking for more local shows. Obviously, not everything can fit in the Community Players or the Heartland Theater. You know, we'd be willing to take another chance to have a partnership with someone like that. Holiday Spectacular is another local production that is there twice a year. And we find a way to make it work financially for them so that it makes sense for both of us. So that's definitely an option. You know, it's not easy on either side of ours, for the theater company or us to make it work. So we got to be willing to stick it out in the long run.
Prior to this role, you were at Miller Park Zoo. Is it harder or easier than working akin to wild animals to be in arts and entertainment?
They're fairly similar. You know, you got animals that don't communicate well, and then sometimes you have tours that don't communicate well. So there's difficulties on both sides. Both fun jobs, though. When you see people leave, they're smiling, which makes the job so much easier to swallow when there's some of those long days, long nights. It's great to watch people leave and have a great experience. So in those ways, it's very similar. They're both enjoyable endeavors, but definitely both have their own challenges. Yeah. That's for sure.
Arts and entertainment budgets for Grossinger Motors Arena and the Bloomington Center for Performing Arts are made public annually. Both venues publish show reports demonstrating event-specific revenue. The department plans to create quarterly reports next fiscal year that will incorporate general operating costs such as staff and building maintenance that are not included in show reports. Director of Arts and Entertainment Anthony Nelson spoke with WGLT's Lauren Warnicki. Thanks for listening to Sound Ideas. Today, I'm John Norton. A former mayor of the town of Normal has passed away. Kent Carriker was in his 80s. WGLT's Charlie Schlenker has this appreciation of Carriker.
Kent Carriker grew up in southern Illinois and became an executive at the Illinois Farm Bureau. He was elected to the town council in 1983 and was elected mayor 10 years later. Carriker was mayor for a decade and stepped down in 2003 during his third term. Current Mayor Chris Kuh says Carriker retired to Florida but visited the Twin Cities often.
He had some heart issues, but he said to me, you know, I've decided that I'd rather be called Grandpa than Mayor.
As Mayor, current City Manager Pam Reese says Carriker set a tone that still influences the culture of town government today.
One of the quotes that has stuck with us and we use regularly is, we plan our work and we work our plan. That is something that Kent said many, many times.
Carriker also mentored those around him. He was mayor when former city manager Mark Peterson was hired.
He just understood the community very well, and he had good instincts on when to push things forward, when to move a project, and when not.
Carriker asked then-businessman Chris Kuse to run for council, and Kuse succeeded Carriker as mayor.
Kent was a very definite mentor to me. I have a lot of respect for the man and his ability to handle tough situations.
Every leader has a style. Former council member Sonia Reese says Carriker's was inclusive.
Kent was congenial. He was welcoming. He was able to invite people to the table and be comfortable with that.
And his personal warmth and politeness shaped most interactions. Here's Carriker's predecessor as mayor, Paul Harmon.
Kent was full of anecdotes and humor. He had a very quick wit.
Harmon says that was sometimes a mask.
He also had an inner tension that he covered up with his ebullience. He was very, very much worried about doing the right thing and worried about decisions that were being made. But he didn't let it show.
Carriker also liked to get down to business and get things done. Former city manager Mark Peterson says staff used to joke Carriker disliked long meetings.
He ran a very efficient council meeting. He would say, you know, the best meeting is a short meeting, and would sometimes get a little frustrated with some of his colleagues when they would get a little too windy.
Former council member Sonia Reese characterizes the desire to cut to the chase as more than simple efficiency, a sign of strategic thinking.
I think he was always focused on what are the most important things that the town should be dealing with. And not spend too much time on the trivials.
Carriker's inclusiveness went beyond town boundaries. Former city manager Mark Peterson says Carriker is responsible for thawing Normal's then-chilly relationship with the city of Bloomington by forming a close tie to Bloomington Mayor Judy Markowitz.
When she got elected, Kent said, "We are riding together in the Labor Day parade." And he made a big deal. He said, "We're going to be together in the parade because we got to show the community that we are, the two cities are together and the two mayors are together."
Former council member Sonia Reese says Carriker followed up that symbolic statement with regular meetings with Markowitz.
They kept the dialogue going between them on the things that they were working on so that there were no particular surprises on either side of what were the high issues between them.
With 20 years of town leadership, Carriker had a big influence on the look of today's town. It started from his conservative roots and a desire to have the town become debt-free. Carriker waved the flag for the pay-as-you-go philosophy, which began under Mayor Paul Harmon.
After we issued the bonds for Mitsubishi coming into town and some of the work we had to do there, the town didn't issue any more bonds through the rest of my time and all through Kent. Getting the town to zero debt made possible the investment being made in the uptown area.
And the ability to extinguish debt, Mark Peterson says, is not an easy thing to do.
We were, at least for a good part of his term, we were debt-free, which for a community like Normal, given the growth we were experiencing, given the very aggressive capital project agenda, that was kind of extraordinary at the time.
Carriker's devotion to debt avoidance was not rigid. Current Mayor Chris Koo says Carriker did not let political philosophy blind him to opportunity when Carriker began strategic planning for what became Uptown Renewal.
Kent kind of bristled initially, but he saw that the town was in a unique position to do this because we were debt-free. He's the one that really started changing the notion of borrowing being a good thing for the community to get projects done.
Carriker began other things, too, that Paul Harmon says later elected officials would complete.
Getting the Children's Museum built in Uptown Normal and getting the groundwork laid for the Amtrak station, City Hall complex, and getting the foundation laid for the advances in Normal.
Mayor Chris Koo says a little-known part of Carriker's time as mayor involves a quiet push to include sexual orientation in protections from discrimination enumerated in the town's human relations ordinance. All the sources for this story, though, say Carriker's emphasis on family shaped his public service and the many quality-of-life improvements he backed. Mark Peterson has one example.
He had a large family. Growing up, he said they were all pool rats, spent a lot of time at Fairview Pool, and one of his, I think, most prideful projects was the renovation of Fairview Pool, and we turned it into Fairview Family Aquatic Center.
At the time he resigned in 2003, Carriker cautioned the community with words that are even more relevant to the wider world today than they were then, not to let those who spread fears through lies lead the way the town is governed. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
And that's Sound Ideas today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton with story help from WGLT's Lindsay Jones, Lauren Warnicke, and Charlie Schlenker. Ryan Tuohy edits the show. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.